Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Happy Friday. If you're looking forward to a weekend, it is just around the corner. So take heart if you need a little break from your week. I hope you had an okay week. I hope God had met you in all of your circumstances throughout your week, and you were always mindful to Him in prayer and in worship and in praise, because He is in control of everything. All right. Let's look back at history very briefly. In 1896, the first x-ray was taken. It was a picture of a hand with a bullet in it. Ah. And in 1932, Hattie Carraway became the first woman elected to the U.S. Senate. That's kind of an exciting thing. And in 1959, Berry Gordy went out on a limb and founded Tamla Records. That, of course, was the future Motown Records. And in 1966, Batman debuted with Adam West and Burt Ward. I used to like that show. I liked it a lot. They didn't really have any superpowers. They got beat up a lot. You know, they were my kind of action heroes. I liked them. All right, we've got a great second hour coming up this morning. Adam Holtz from Plugged In is with us. We're going to chat with him. And I was just reading about a brand new theater at the Mall of America here in Bloomington, Minnesota. If you've ever come to visit Minnesota, usually it's on the list of things you might want to go see. I don't know why, but it's out there. It's a big thing. And the new movie theater is going to have seats that I think start at around $25 a ticket. I guess they're pretty comfortable, and there's food service and everything else. They're really trying to make the going to the movie experience much more luxurious. So we'll find out what Adam thinks about that as well. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We'll be back with Adam Holtz in just a minute. Good morning. It's 7 minutes after the hour. Adam Holtz from Plugged In is already on our studio line. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Bill.
Well, so I was, I don't know if you heard right before I went to break, I was talking about this new luxury theater experience. Have you personally enjoyed that yet?
I mean, most of the theaters around here have now converted to these huge recliners, and I guess it just shows that I really am a critic at heart. It feels like the appearance of luxury, but they're so cheap that I often find myself squirming trying to get comfortable.
Interesting.
But it could just be that I'm super high maintenance too, which all of my family would agree with.
Right. You know?
And there's a couple theaters in Denver that do the food service thing, and I'm sort of mixed on that. I think it's a super cool idea, but when you have waiters and waitresses walking back and forth in front of people trying to watch a movie, I find it a little bit distracting. So, I don't know. For me, it's sort of a mixed bag. I'm there to watch a movie. Being in a giant recliner, you know, unless I'm really sleepy and I'm watching a kid's movie and I can just tilt back and go to sleep. Not sure. I don't care that much. I don't think it's worth making a ticket cost twice as much.
Right.
So,
right.
There you go.
Yeah. When I look at the list of food that's available, handcrafted pizzas, burgers, shakes, steaks,
well, what
salmon.
What does that even mean? Handcrafted.
I don't know.
They're not frozen, right?
I don't know. But it seems like there is a certain high novelty level. Would think it'd be fun to do once, but...
No, I think it'd be fun to go check out once.
Yeah, but after you go to a movie that you didn't even care for very much and you're out $95, that would probably feel like... My brain won't go there. $95 for a movie with food.
The level of, you know, concert ticket prices when
right.
I was growing up.
Right. So exactly. Exactly.
I just don't want to pay that much for a movie.
All right. So what's in the theaters that we should be paying attention to?
Well, let's talk about a bear, Bill. Paddington 2 is out. And, you know, as a parent, sometimes my kids will see a trailer and they'll be like, ooh, I really want to see that. And you just quietly kind of grown, or maybe not quietly grown.
Yeah.
And Paddington is one of those things that I think on the surface you might think, oh, man, it's a movie about a famous stuffed bear. But I just want to say this is a pretty delightful movie. I think it's better than the first one that came out a couple of years ago. And in this one, Paddington the bear, who hails from the deepest, darkest jungles of Peru, I think, and now is in London with a family, the Browns, Paddington gets into trouble. And he's not trying to. He just kind of does. He's sort of, you know, a Dennis the Menace, you know, for those of your listeners who still remember Dennis the Menace. Trouble kind of finds Paddington, and he wants to buy this rare book to send back to his grandmother, Lucy, in the jungle. And the rare book, it turns out, let's just say there's some things that make it very desirable. And Hugh Grant plays a character of a famous actor who also has designs on the book and frames Paddington. And Paddington ends up in prison, and that's not really a spoiler if you've seen the commercials.
Okay.
So it's sort of like, what is Paddington going to do in the big house? What are the Browns going to do? How are they going to make this crime right? But it really is kind of a lovely movie about friendship, about perseverance, about optimism. And one of the things that Paddington says over and over is basically a version of, what would my Aunt Lucy do? And so he has this kind of moral exemplar in mind. And she basically says, when you do the right thing, things will turn out right in the end. And I'm paraphrasing, but that's the gist of it. And, you know, I want to be careful not to compare an animated imaginary bear to Jesus. But even the way Paddington goes about sort of what would Aunt Lucy do, there's some distant echoes of what would Jesus do in that. And asking that question makes Paddington, helps him make the right decisions and makes him a kind of a remarkably transformative character in a lot of people's lives. So, again, sometimes you can't judge a bear by the cover, if I can mix that up a little bit. And this was a really delightful problem with not very many problems. I mean, no language to deal with, just not much. I mean, I would say read our review. There's a little bit of passing weird spirituality, but even that is really minor.
Yeah. And Adam, safe to say you can see Paddington 2 without having seen Paddington 1?
No, you don't need to have seen Paddington 1. And in fact, the villain in Paddington 1 was played by Nicole Kidman, and she wants to stuff him. She runs a museum. This is actually less nefarious and sinister than that. I think it's actually a better movie for young kids who might have been freaked out by the first one.
Awesome. Okay, now I think the number one movie out today is The Greatest Showman.
Yeah, The Greatest Showman. Wow, what a kind of come out of nowhere movie. You know, for those who don't know, Hugh Jackman, who maybe is most famous for playing Wolverine, is also a song and dance Broadway kind of guy. He loves doing these musicals. And this is another one. He portrays P.T. Barnum, and it's a very stylized, only really loosely accurate look at P.T. Barnum's early life as he got the circus going. And basically, Barnum has this huge dream to entertain people. And as is often the case with mavericks of all kinds, it doesn't go very well, and people resist him. But his family, his wife and his two daughters are solidly behind him. And he goes out and kind of recruits people that the rest of the world thinks are complete freaks. You know, there's the bearded lady. There are a couple little people. There's a Russian guy, I think, who's like, boy, it looks like he's 10 feet tall on screen. They're trapeze artists, and they bring elephants in. And even though he's accused of exploiting them, what the movie says is that he's the first person in many of these people's lives who has really accepted them and valued them for who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's again, it's another movie that is super entertaining, some great music, with a really strong message, I think, about dignity, about worth, about contribution, about sticking together as a family, both his family and the circus family. There's a smattering of sexual content here. Barnum interacts with a female singer who kind of has designs on him, and so there's, you see him wrestling with that temptation, but it doesn't go in a terrible direction, and just a tiny bit of language and a little bit of violence, but again, it's a pretty solid PG movie, and it's one that I think you could honestly think about taking older kids and teens to. I saw it with my family. The theater was full of teens, and it's almost having like a Frozen effect. They're apparently doing screenings where people are singing along to the songs.
Wow.
My family loves the soundtrack, and so it's another surprisingly good movie that we don't have a lot of, you know, well, it's great, but we can't go see it because of X, you know. A few minor things. So check out our review to make a good decision for your family, but it's another one that I would highly recommend for most families.
Yeah, and of course, Adam's reviews can be seen at PluggedIn.com, PluggedIn.com. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll keep the movie review hits going. It's 16 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back. Good morning. It's 18 minutes after the hour. I'm talking to Adam Holtz from PluggedIn.com. We're talking about movie releases, movie reviews. He sees them all and he reports back and does it well. Adam, let's talk about The Commuter. That's Liam Neeson, isn't it?
Yeah, that is Liam Neeson. And if you've seen any of the, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, however many Taken movies there have been, this sort of feels like Taken on a train.
Okay.
That would be the best way that I could describe it. And Liam Neeson said in September that he wasn't going to make these kind of movies anymore, but here he is again. I suppose it's hard to you know, turn down the paycheck. And, you know, speaking of that, this is a movie about a man who has to decide whether he's going to turn down the paycheck or not. He's a normal, everyday guy on a train, a commuter train, and one morning, right after he finds out he's going to be laid off, he's not sure how he's going to get his kid through college, this mysterious woman approaches him on a train and says that she'll give him $100,000 if he can help her locate a mysterious person on the train, someone, she says, the person who doesn't belong by the time they reach a certain stop. Well, you know, probably $100,000 is enough to make most of us sit up and take notice. And, you know, it's interesting, it's tempting, and when he sort of starts to waffle and think, wait a minute, you know, are these guys up to no good, they start doing really bad things to people to sort of manipulate him into finding this person. So it's a thriller, takes place on a train, Liam Neeson is involved with, you know, people dying, as was the case, I mean, it's not funny, but as was the case in the Taken movies, as he tries to keep these people from doing any more bad things than possible. So I would say it's a sort of solid PG-13 movie in terms of content, as you might expect. There are quite a few people who don't get off the train, so to speak, at the end, and quite a bit of death and violence. It's all PG-13, bloodless and sanitized. There's no story here. But there's that, and there's a fair bit of language as well, and you can check out our review at PluggedIn.com to get a better sense of how much there is and whether it's more than you want to subject yourself to. So, you know, it's sort of a glass half full, half empty kind of proposition. I think Liam Neeson's Taken movies have been popular because he kind of has this every man feel about him, and we all like to imagine ourselves as you know, these heroes in these situations. But on the other hand, there's a lot of violence and profanity here, and this is a pretty tired and familiar story at this point.
Okay.
So,
and did you
not sure there's much point in getting on this train for most folks.
Okay, let's move on then. The Post, that's with Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep.
Yeah, and directed by Steven Spielberg. It's sort of like the Holy Trinity of Hollywood right there. The Post is a biopic based on events that happened in 1971. Early that year, the New York Times published a story, an explosive story, about these secret documents, 47 volumes known as the Pentagon Papers. And these were documents that showed that the government had been lying to the American people about its involvement in Vietnam over four different administrations. Well, Nixon sued and blocked their release temporarily, and in the meantime, the Washington Post also had access to the papers. And it's really the story of the woman who was the head of the Post at that point, Kay Graham, and the moral and ethical complexities of, do we publish these papers or not? You know, on one hand, it's a service to the public. On the other hand, is it legal? Is it ethical? Is it going to put people in danger? And so it's a pretty, you know, as you would expect with a movie by Spielberg and Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep, it's a movie that really is about ethical complexity. And on that level, it's pretty well done. And it's the kind of movie that'll make you think. And in our current environment, obviously fake news is in the news all the time, and it sort of has some distant echoes of, you know, what a newspaper's responsibility is. And depending on where you're at on the political spectrum, there are all sorts of opinions on that. And this is a movie that probably really lionizes the Washington Post in particular as a newspaper trying to get to the truth, at least back in that time. Probably the biggest issues here are profanity and quite a bit of alcohol use as well.
Mm-hmm.
But if that kind of drama is the kind of thing that really engages you as a moviegoer, I think, you know, there's reason to at least, again, check out our review and decide for yourself and for your family if that content level is something you can deal with or whether it pushes it out of bounds for
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Adam, I'm not much of a TV person, but I think it was in 2015 a new show started called Black Mirror, which is a tech-obsessed rendition of The Twilight Zone?
That's exactly what it is. There's not a continual cast of characters. Every episode is its own deal. And basically, Black Mirror, which started in England and has now come to the United States, takes a look at these crazy stories involving technology. And an episode that we recently reviewed, and if you're not familiar, Plugged In reviews TV shows, and then we go back and periodically pick up new episodes, has to do with a guy who works at a tech company, and by day and by night he has this sort of virtual Star Trek simulator where all of his coworkers are characters in it. So it really is in the Twilight Zone kind of zone. Unfortunately, as provocative and interesting as that is, there are elements that are provocative in a bad way as well. There's a lot of profanity. The show stops short of, you know, really explicit sexual stuff, but there's certainly a lot of innuendo there and things that the broadcast networks, for the most part, can't get away with. This is a Netflix show, and Netflix obviously has really surged in the last few years. So it's one of these shows that people are buzzing about, but if you don't know what it's about and you tune in, you might be really unpleasantly surprised at how explicit some of the content is.
Okay. We just have about a minute or so left. Russell Brand has never been on my list of people that I've been drawn to. He's really quite raunchy, and yeah. He was Katy Perry's ex-husband.
Yeah.
So he does have kind of a platform. People do pay attention to him, and he is probably the least likely person to have a spiritual encounter with Jesus, but maybe he's starting to see things differently.
Well, it sure seems like he is. He's got a new book out about his overcoming addiction, and recently did an interview with Relevant magazine about his encounter with Jesus. And he basically, I'm going to just boil it down, says we're all empty inside, and the culture offers us ways to try to fill that, but they lead to addiction and they don't get the job done. And he seems to be having some kind of an encounter with Jesus where he's talking about Jesus, talking about praying, he's talking about reading the Bible, he's talking about scripture and really having God fill you instead. Now, whether Russell Brand has a real relationship with Christ, I don't know. But I think he's at least on the right track to the extent that he's diagnosing the problem. And at least in some ways, he's pointing people toward Jesus in a way that is pretty surprising. He says, quote, unless Christ is right here, right now, in your heart, in your consciousness, then what is Christ? I do think a spiritual and transcendent change is required to free people from addiction. That's interesting. You know, it's more than just, thank you, God, for everything you do for me.
Right.
He's really diagnosing the problem and saying that we need help from God to become the kind of people we want to be.
Yeah. Adam, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much. Have a nice weekend at the movies, and I'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Sounds great, Bill. Thank you.
You bet, Adam. 27 minutes after the hour, we'll take a break, and then coming up next at 20 minutes to, we're going to talk to Dr. Glenn Pickering. We'll be back in a minute.
I'm going to sing this song to let you know that you're not alone. And if you're like me, you need hope, coffee, melody.
Hope, coffee, and melody. It's kind of what I need, too, this morning. On this chilly, chilly day, we're going to take a little break for news. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. Glenn Pickering at 20 minutes until the top of the hour.
Waiting on you to show your face.
I've often heard parents say, I've done everything right. How come my kid's going sideways on me? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. It's possible that you've felt that way too. If you discipline by the book, your kids should turn out to be picture perfect, right? But what happens when it doesn't work? And let me tell you, in today's culture, those old recipes for parenting almost never deliver what we expect. When kids don't respond the way we hoped, maybe it's time to shift our approach. What isn't working in your home? How can you adjust your style? For now, scrap the false notion that doing everything right will fix your family. Try something new and never give up.
Having trouble parenting your teen in today's rapidly changing culture? Mark Gregston can help. Get instant access to Mark's new free parenting course online at freeparentingcourse.com.
Good morning. It's 22 minutes until the top of the hour. I hate to interrupt that great guitar lick, but my guest this morning on our studio line, Dr. Glenn Pickering, has been a frequent guest of the show, and we always love talking to Glenn. Glenn is an author and a counselor and a seminar leader and a pastor and an engineer. I could spend most of our time together talking about your resume, Glenn, but I'm not going to do that this morning. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm recovering like so many people, but I'm getting better.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. You know, every time the new year rolls around, most people will say, I'm going to try to make a change. I want to do something different. I want my life to be new in a special way. And a lot of people are nervous about that because they have a fear of failure. What's with that?
Right. I think it's really interesting. That's just so interesting of a point. And because we have that pride thing going. Is it okay if I talk about that for a minute?
Well, please.
Well, you know, I just think this, that we get all messed up. Like, think of the word humility or humble. Like, what are the pictures or the words that come to your mind when you say, or you think, oh, that person is so humble?
Yeah. Quiet to themselves, gentle, all that kind of stuff.
Right. And we think of them as being sort of people maybe who maybe even think a little less of themselves.
Yeah, that's probably better.
I just think that's so non-biblical that we get that all messed up. Because the world says, if you make a mistake, that's a really bad thing. And so if you do make a mistake, if you do something wrong, if it doesn't go quite right, then you want to do one of two things. You want to either hide it and really hope nobody notices that you made that mistake, or then if somebody does notice, then you want to blame it on, you know, the people who didn't do their part right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know me, you've heard me talk a bunch of times about the game I call Tag, where we always want to make somebody else be the bad one. And I was just rereading again this story this morning and getting ready for our call about Adam and Eve. And so the serpent convinces Eve and then Adam that really they think they're so great, like God says, but really there's something wrong with them, and they're dumb enough to believe that. And so they eat the apple, and then they do two things. First, they want to hide themselves. So they sew fig leaves on themselves, and they hide themselves behind a tree, which just always makes me laugh, like I can hide from God.
Right.
And then when Adam, you know, God does say, well, why did you eat that apple? He says, you know, the woman you gave me, you know, she made me eat it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, see, because we're so afraid of making a mistake, because we think a mistake would just prove that we're not good enough, just like the serpent says. But I think, see, if we're really humble, we don't think less of ourselves. We're just very, very transparent about our strengths and our weaknesses.
I like that, but that requires some level of vulnerability a lot of people have trouble getting to.
Right, and we have that vulnerability because we don't really believe who God says we are.
Say more, Glenn.
Thank you. Just kidding. I just think, see, God says, Glenn, here's who you are. You are very good. I created you. I created you exactly as you are. You have certain gifts that other people don't have. You also are lacking certain gifts that other people do have. But trust me, you are the perfect version of you. And I need to believe that that's true. So if somebody points out a mistake I made or something I'm not very good at, I don't need to get all apologetic or defensive or pretend it's not true or blame it on somebody else. I just need to think, yeah, you know, you're right. That's not one of my gifts.
Well, Glenn, what about some of the self-talk that we have, that we don't even need other people reminding us that we're doing things poorly because we're so busy reminding ourselves that we're doing it poorly?
Crazy, crazy voice in the back of our head.
It crushes God's sense of preciousness about us because we're so busy condemning ourselves for behavior that we repeat or things that we continually kind of do, and we can't seem to get a control on it.
Right. I honestly think that's actually one of the main purposes of prayer. And I've been thinking about this a lot lately. Like, you know, there's that voice, like you say, in the back of our head chattering all the time. And it's not us. And it's for sure not God. But we can kind of think it is either us or God. And we need to be at prayer often enough to feel God's gentle presence, God's love for us, God's gentle leading of us, to think, oh, yeah, that's what God's actual voice sounds like. It's gentle. It's quiet. It's also challenging. But it's also very clear, very loving. It's like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. And we need to keep coming back to that voice because otherwise you're right. We think the voice chattering in our head is actually right.
Mm-hmm.
So not. So here's what I think. So if we humbly accept both our strengths and our weaknesses, that means that if somebody says, hey, Glenn, you made a mistake over here, I don't do that prideful thing where I either pretend, just like Adam and Eve, that I didn't make the mistake. Well, I didn't do that. Or blame it on somebody else. Well, if those people in the accounting department had just gotten those numbers to me quicker, I wouldn't have had that problem. I can just say, oh, yeah, okay, I can see that. I'll do that better next time. I just learned the lesson. I acknowledge my struggle that I'm probably never going to be good, for example, in my case, at detail management. And I just, you know, learn whatever lesson I need to do and move on.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't do the false humility thing when I do something right. So I love teaching seminars, as you know. And if somebody comes up to me after one of my seminars and says, Glenn, you're such a great teacher, which with all modesty they do say. Okay, I'm just kidding. But let's say somebody comes up to me and says, Glenn, you're such a great teacher. See, if I'm actually humble, I don't do that false modesty thing like, oh, shucks, not really, or I don't know, I had a lot of help. If somebody gives me a compliment about something that really is a gift that God has given me, and I'm humble, I just say, well, thank you. I'm glad that was helpful to you. So I don't have to falsely pretend I made it, don't make a mistake, but I don't also have to falsely pretend I don't have gifts.
Right, right.
If I'm actually humble, I just acknowledge that I have gifts and weaknesses.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to think if we're, by nature, I think we sometimes build a subconscious list of reasons why our lives aren't going the way we think they should be going.
Right.
So we're already developing what we consider to be a justifiable list. You know, I could have a better job if Glenn would just let me borrow his car to go to work. It's kind of your fault, you know.
Right.
And we have a tendency, like you say, of wanting to make the other person it, to try to give us an excuse or a reason to feel safe in our dysfunction.
Right, because then we don't have to do anything, and I can stay in my little comfort zone. But here's what I know for absolute certain. God is continually asking me to take one step outside my comfort zone. And, you know, there are many, many call narratives in the scriptures, stories where God or an angel comes down to earth to talk to somebody and call them to do something. And here's what they never say. I came all the way down to earth to tell you this. Just keep doing what you're doing.
That's never the message, is it?
No, it just isn't.
Yeah. All right.
So God is always asking us to grow out past where we are so far.
Yeah. All right. I got a couple more questions for you. I need all to right. run to a break right now, but when I come back, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Glenn Pickering. His website is Glenn Pickering. That's two N's, GlennPickering. You should go check it out. Be back in a minute. Twelve minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Dr. Glenn Pickering from glennpickering.com. Glenn is a psychologist, a counselor, a teacher, a seminar leader. He does it all. Glenn, I got a couple questions left for you between now and our time to wrap up. One is about humility and dignity, because when we talk about being humble, and maybe that's more of a servant's heart sort of mentality, how do we do that well and not feel like we're getting walked on?
That's a great question, and it comes down to what we were talking about just before the break, about if I really, really get that God has gifted me in certain ways that only I have, and that that's true, and that God has also gifted everybody else in ways that only they are gifted, which is also true. See, I can stand in knowing what my strengths and weaknesses are, knowing that they're all just a gift, without being prideful, but also without doing that false modesty thing where, oh, no, you don't have to compliment me, because I do have gifts, and I want to accept my strengths and my weaknesses. Now, if I do that, see, then I can acknowledge my weaknesses with total dignity.
Like,
for example, I really wanted to learn how to play the harmonica. I love how the harmonica sounds. I know that's weird. I'm probably one of only four people in America. But and I realized once I started listening to an instructional video that you have to be able to shape your tongue into a V, and then I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm missing that muscle, or more likely, you know, that part of my brain just doesn't work right. But so I can't do it. Now, so if somebody listened to me and said, Glenn, you know, I don't think you're ever going to be good at playing the harmonica, I'm going to say, you're absolutely right. And I can say that with total dignity without thinking, oh, that just shows there's something wrong with me, I'm a bad person, I'm so stupid. No, I just think, yeah, that's not one of my gifts. Same thing if they say, Glenn, you're really a great teacher. I think, well, thank you. That is one of my gifts. And I can accept both of those with dignity because I realize it doesn't mean there's something wrong with me. It just means that's how I was built. And when God says, Glenn, you're perfect, he didn't mean you have every golden gift I ever gave any other human being. He just means you're perfectly you. And I have to be able to just really claim what I'm gifted at, what I'm not, and then to just know, right, and I just stand humbly in knowing what I'm gifted at and what I'm not. And so if I'm hey, here's something you're good at, I think, yeah, that's true. Or they say, oh, Glenn, here's a place where you often make mistakes, I think, yeah, that's true too.
Mm-hmm.
Without thinking somehow that means there's something wrong with me because I'm built exactly the way I am built.
Yeah. What if
I'm called to do? Go ahead.
What if I'm going to be using some of those weaknesses as a little bit of a weapon against you when I'm maybe mad at you or I'm not getting out of you what I want from you?
Mm-hmm.
How fair is that?
Oh, yeah, it's totally unfair. And because, you know, we do play that game of tag, like I say, where we don't want things to be our fault, we don't want to be the bad one, so we want to hide our flaws or blame somebody else. Then when you do that, I'm likely to want to have to defend myself. And oftentimes, you know, I work a lot with couples who are going through struggles, and oftentimes I will see how fast they get into that kind of defensive mode. And I just think, but see, that assumes I need to be defended. If I really, really get, I am exactly as God created me.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody says, Glenn, there's some things you're never going to be good at. I think, yeah, that's true.
Right.
It's just true. I love how that old book, Strength Finders, talked about how if you have something you're bad at, you're going to really, really work like crazy at it and get a little teeny bit better at it. Or if there's something you're good at, you're going to work at it a little bit and get a lot better at it. And so we often think as Christians, like trying to be on the path is about eliminating our mistakes. But really it's mostly about noticing what we're good at, claiming our gifts, and just trying to spend all of our time kind of doing those things better.
Mm-hmm.
if I'm really humble, I acknowledge what I'm not good at, and I don't spend a lot of time doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm humble, I acknowledge what I'm gifted at, and I try and spend almost all my time doing that.
Yeah. Glenn, as we start the new year again, we're only 12 days into it. You're a mental health expert, and the rest of us just have the internet. But I'm seeing all kinds of news stories about our commander-in-chief is really not fit for office because of psychological problems, and we're all, you know, racing around the internet looking at stuff. And what about when that pertains to certain family members? I mean, what are the dangers of self-diagnosis? Or, you know, if we suspect there's a family member that is suffering from a mental health issue, what would be the next steps to take to someone that you think might be having problems?
Well, I would want them. I would want to take the same approach. I mean, I would want them to take with me. For example, let's say somebody comes up to me and wants to talk to me about a weakness or a struggle I have, and trust me, I have a whole list. Now, they could come to me as an attack. Glenn, you're bad at this, you're terrible at this, you got this problem, you got that problem. And I'm going to be so busy defending myself against the attack that even if they're right, I'm not going to be able to hear them.
Mm.
Why, when the Apostle Paul says in Romans, why do you put a stumbling block? Why do you judge your brother or sister? What, you just put a stumbling block in their path. So if I feel like I'm being attacked for my weaknesses, I just get so defensive. I actually am now a step further from actually ever doing something about that because I've just spent so much time convincing myself that my way is okay. So if somebody actually wants to be helpful to me about one of my weaknesses, I need them to be able to say, Glenn, I love you like a brother. Here's something you might want to think about.
Now,
I can actually hear what it is that they're saying to me.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think when it comes to hearing information about yourself, it doesn't matter almost how it's framed in the beginning, because once you get that information, isn't the natural default to feel attacked and defensive?
It is a natural default, which is part of why when I talk to the people about breaking out of the game of tag, I talk about how we don't tell the truth and we don't hear the truth. And so very often, even if people are trying to tell us the truth in love, we hear it as an attack. So part of being humble is to just slow down and think, hey, if I do have a weakness, I don't have to defend myself against that. Because, of course, I don't have every strength in the world. I just have the ones that God gave me. So I have to drop that sort of knee-jerk thing, which we see Adam and Eve doing, which humans have literally been doing since the beginning of time, and think, no, what is there here that I need to learn? Because I love reading stories about people who have had near-death experiences, you know, who died, crossed over to the other side, and then came back. And they tell us that there's only two things we bring with us, love and wisdom. So all the people we love on this side, we still love them when we go over. And all the lessons we learn, we take with us. So clearly, a big, big part of what we're supposed to be doing while we're here is learning lessons. So if somebody comes to me and says, Glenn, here's a thing that is going wrong, or a thing you should probably hear about, or a thing I need to talk to you about, I need to be willing to consciously drop that knee-jerk part of thinking I need to defend myself and hear what they actually have to say, because it's entirely possible there's a really big lesson in there that I need to learn,
mm-hmm.
and I want to learn it.
So it's being able to suspend our history with someone, too, because
yeah.
I mean, oftentimes the default is, well, yeah, like you don't do that, too.
Right, exactly. I talk a lot with my clients about becoming what I call a second responder. Because our first response is almost always, I think, to play tag. I think we have to defend ourselves or lash back or blame somebody else. I literally have to feel that, drop it, prayerfully listen for a better answer, use my freedom in Christ to actually say whatever I would actually want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch me on film in slow motion, you'd laugh because it's so funny. He stops, he nods because he can feel that knee-jerk reaction. He looks back and up until the left, where God is teaching him a better thing to say. He smiles and comes back and looks you in the eye and says that better thing.
Yeah. Boy, communication is hard, isn't it, Glenn? It's a lot of work. We have to keep ourselves focused and grounded in prayer and looking at all of the people we encounter throughout the day through the lens of Christ.
Right, and to always be asking myself, if I slowed down here and said what was actually on my heart, what would that be?
Yeah. Glenn, such a pleasure. Always love having you on the show. Have a great weekend, and I hope that little cold feels better, effective immediately.
Thank you, sir.
Yep. Have a great day. It's 3 minutes till the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up the show. Thanks to all my guests for a great show. Keep the faith this weekend. Everybody stay warm. Have a great weekend. I'll see you Monday. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.